Welcome back in, hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. We've got David Ubben from The Athletic coming up at 7:30. Tennessee getting to their spring game over the weekend. Some fun offense. Football's flying around a little bit in Neyland Stadium. Looking forward to that conversation coming up at 7:30 with David Ubben. The Rex Rant at 7:45, Joe Rex Road, another rant, the third edition of the Rex Rant coming up later this hour. Corey Curtis at 8 o'clock, Darren McFarland at 9 o'clock, and as always, taking in all your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025.
And after the Rex Rant, your chance to win Preds Panthers tickets to tonight's game.
Ooh, so you can be there in the building tonight to watch the Nashville Predators host the Florida Panthers coming up at 7:45 today. So make sure you're tuning in for that. Right now, talking all things NFL draft, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caleb on the text line says, the Titans should pick a corner in the first round. Even with all the veteran pickups on the D-line, they still need the defense addressed more. They can find plenty of good fits in the offense in the later rounds. Caleb saying you got to go cornerback in the first round.
So my problem with that whole line of thinking is, like, I don't think you can say we got to get a bleep here, okay? Because what if one of the other positions of need you have a player rated way higher than any of the other corners? And what if you actually have some corners who are second, third round guys who you don't think are much different from some of the lower first round guys? That's, you know, so I mean, like, I think any team that goes into this draft and says, we got to get a fill in the position in this, with our pick, they're screwed.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I mean, every team has a big board. Now, that's an interesting thing, too. I'd love to see, like, what is the Titans' big board? Someone was reporting over the weekend the lowest big board they've ever heard of, I think, was the Patriots one year. It had like 95 guys on it.
Yeah.
Some have like 200 guys on it. But basically, you're ranking the players, you know, regardless of position. So I think you have to stay true to that within reason, as we've talked about. Najee Harris on your big board. Don't take Najee Harris if you're the Titans at 22. You know, he's an incredible player, but don't do that. You know, there wouldn't really be a quarterback. There wouldn't be a quarterback example. But like some years, you know, you might have like let's say who would it even be? Like Kellen Mond. It wouldn't
sure.
There's no one who would fit the bill. But you know, my point being like if there's a QB there and he's on the top of your big board, take the QB.
Yeah. Trey Lance slides. Just leave him alone.
I don't know. I mean you could have him as a trade chip. By the way, on the Julio thing, Peter King threw the Titans out there. See that?
Oh yeah?
Yeah, he did. Peter King said the Titans are among three teams. Now he didn't say that they are interested, but he said could be interested. That's pretty big. That's a pretty big like difference
sure.
in wording.
Yes.
It's his speculation, not anything he's reporting, but still it's interesting.
Ryan Porth is already online right now buying a Julio Jones Titans jersey.
It won't be number 11 though.
Maybe will. Maybe AJ Brown gives it up out of respect.
I don't think AJ gives it up.
Julio goes back to his college numbers. Get number 8 in there.
What if eight?
Yes.
Replacing Titans
Absolutely.
Legend Marcus Mariota. Number
yes.
8, Julio Jones for your Tennessee Titans.
How many 8 jerseys would we see around Nissan Stadium with duct tape over Mariota just written Jones?
You'd see a lot.
You're desperate for someone to take that 8, aren't you, as soon as possible?
It's going to be retired. No, I'm not desperate for somebody to take it.
Well, if it's going to be retired, then you have that little window of when people can wear it
before
it's retired.
Yeah. So they better get moving.
I think there's a 0% chance the Titans would seriously look to trade for Julio Jones. In
Zero.
All seriousness. I mean, like a call to see if you can get him for a song. But I don't
for
think.
For a song?
Yeah. Yeah, it's an old.
I've actually heard of that.
It's an old person saying.
Yes. Well done, Joe.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the text line.
By
driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ryan texts in. I feel Newsom is overhyped. He's my fifth cornerback along with both Bulldogs. You know about Greg Newsom? Now, I've seen this too, and they were talking about this. I want to say it was on NFL Network last week. They were talking about Greg Newsom and the lack of competition going up against elite wide receivers at his level. What do you think of that? And when you look at Greg Newsom, there's not tape of him going up against a ton of just elite guys out there. How much does that matter, and how much of it is just, all right, we've seen the player that he was, and we've also seen the measurables that he has as well. What do you think about that? What do you think? How much should that factor in if you're the Titans?
Yeah, no, I've seen that, and the way the schedule broke, he missed some of the best guys he could have seen. That's fair. Look, I think this is why. So I did this mock draft today at The Athletic, and I came away with a bunch of Big Ten guys, and I thought about it later. I'm like, I think J-Rob, I honestly think, like, I don't think he says, okay, let's this guy and this guy, let's go with the SEC guy.
Right.
But the SEC guys have the best competition. They have the most on film where you can say, okay, we know what this guy's going to be in the NFL, or we think we know, and now we can watch this guy against. Again, Christian Fulton last year had his ups and downs against those Bama receivers, but he had enough ups where you said, okay, there you go. He's going against the best of the best in the college game, and he's performing pretty well. So I think it's fair. Like the Georgia guys, they've had their ups and downs too, Stokes and Tyson Campbell, but they certainly are more proven. There's more film of them going against top high of draft pros than what Newsom has.
So got lit up by Josh Palmer, but yeah.
Right. Well, it's right. Yeah. I mean, you have your downs, but –
I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, no. I mean, it's true. I mean, that was actually, by the way, some great just throw the fade up, Garantano. Those are good throws.
Speaking of him, before we get any further, yeah. Did you see on his first pass this weekend he throws a pick?
I didn't see it, but I saw on Twitter.
I saw the video of it.
Did you?
It was pretty bad.
So I love that. Like, so Emily Proud, friend of the show, like I saw her tweet. That's the first time I saw it was her tweet about it. And her tweet was like, oh, no, be nice, Vol Twitter. And I'm like,
that's not going to happen.
So you basically just took a match and just threw it on the kerosene there. Yeah, because Vol Twitter's not going to be nice about it.
No, they are not.
And then what, he got hurt? So then he didn't play the rest.
See that.
Yeah, apparently he hurt his hand either on that play or right after, and he didn't play the rest of the game. So he didn't even have a chance to redeem himself. So
it's a tough one.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ron text in. Good morning, guys. How do you guys feel about our backup quarterback, and do you think this is the year to address the Ryan Tannehill replacement? I doubt this is the year to address the replacement. I do think the backup quarterback is a fair question, but they're not drafting Ryan Tannehill's replacement this year.
Right. I mean, unless, a guy like Kellen Mond or Jamie Newman or Felipe Franks turned into more in the NFL than they project to be. It's possible.
Sure, but they're not out there actively seeking Ryan Tannehill's replacement.
No, not at all. I think that you could certainly make the case to try to upgrade the backup situation. It's just hard. Like, to do that, you have to go, I think, to take one of those, in the top 100, or maybe pick 126 to do it. And do you really want to do that this year? I mean, I know Darren McFarlane would do it. But you'd have to really, really love the guy in question. And, that's always possible. TD brought up a good point last week. I mean, a guy – it's just like we never talk about Jared Pinkney at the tight end spot. We never talk about DeShone Kizer at quarterback. He had a rough go, and he was in about as bad a situation as you could be in Cleveland.
Yes.
So, at least there's competition at the two between those two guys. You don't feel great about it, but – like, if any of those rookies, say you bring in like a Felipe Franks, you're going to feel great about him coming in and winning a game for you this year as a rookie?
Probably not.
So, I mean, the whole idea of upgrading backup quarterback to me is get a guy who has started and won in this league. Okay, fine. But if in the draft you're not, I mean, I don't feel great about Logan Woodside, but I don't feel great about any of those second, third tier quarterbacks either.
No.
So I don't really see the point. Unless you actually think, okay, actually, this guy might grow into something more.
Speaking of quarterbacks, this coming out from Ian Rappaport last night, as the 49ers closing in on their decision at number 3, looks like they're down to two guys, Mac Jones and Trey Lance, quarterback out of North Dakota State.
Wouldn't want any Justin Fields.
Yeah, it's apparently just not even under consideration for Justin Fields. I, look, maybe Trey Lance is going to be like a stud at the NFL level. I don't know. I don't really understand the hype around him. He's played 1 year of college football at a really low level. Now, albeit he was really good, and I'm sure that, you know, the measurables are great and all this other stuff, but to me, having your consideration be between Mac Jones and Trey Lance and totally dismissing Justin Fields, if this is true and this is what San Francisco is leaning towards, I think it's crazy. Like, I think Justin Fields is going to be pretty good at the NFL level. This is just, and we've talked about it a few times, it looks like Justin Fields is going to fall a little bit in this draft. And the fact that there, if you would have told me heading into this process a couple months ago that the number three quarterback is going to be either Mac Jones or Trey Lance, I said, you're crazy. And Justin Fields is not going to be a part of that at all. I continue to be very surprised by this.
Yeah, I'm more surprised on the field side of it just because I really think he could be great. He's not a finished product, but I think he could be great. You know, the small college quarterback thing, like, I just don't know with Trey Lance, honestly. I've seen footage, looks good. There's a lot of small college QBs who have been great. I mean, McNair, Tony Romo.
Joe Flacco, baby.
You got Flacco. I mean, Kurt Warner. You got Jimmy G, Carson Wentz. I mean, obviously he hasn't been what you hope. But, I mean, the point being, obviously the guy can play in this league.
Sure.
And people identified him at North Dakota State as a guy who could. And, I mean, they weren't wrong. He just hasn't been what you've hoped. But still, like, so few are. So I don't discount. I mean, shoot, Fitzmagic was slinging it at Harvard.
Yeah,
I don't discount the small college thing. I just don't know enough about him, you know. But the Fields part of it is, if you're San Francisco, I know you're thinking short term here. So you're thinking a little bit more ready to come in right now. So that's got to be the thing with Jones and Lance. They feel like right now they're more ready. Because I just don't – I don't see how you could think those guys have a higher ceiling than Fields. I can't imagine, but we'll see.
We will see, and it looks like that's what they're deciding between at number three overall is Mac Jones and Trey Lance. So we'll see how that plays out later this week. When we come back, Tennessee on the field this weekend in their spring game. The offense looked pretty good. Could we see an offensive explosion out of the Volunteers this year under Josh Heupel? We'll discuss that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have David Ubben from The Athletic joining us at 7:30 here in about 10 minutes. We'll get into the Tennessee spring game in detail with him coming up. But apparently, Joe, football was flying around the yard a little bit at Neyland Stadium on Saturday. The quarterbacks looking pretty good. The skill players standing out offensively. They dominated the game. And a lot of quarterback action coming up or that happened this last Saturday. Hendon Hooker gets in there. Harrison Bailey. Brian Maurer as well. Harrison Bailey in particular, pretty good game on Saturday in the orange and white game. He was 5 of 5, according to David Ubben, on 15-yard or more throws down the field, 203 yards and a touchdown, and I think overall ended up 11 of 15 on his throws. So, and actually, I take that back, 11 of 13 on his throws. So a really good day for Harrison Bailey. Hendon Hooker comes in, makes some nice plays, throws a nice touchdown towards the end of the game there as well. Brian Maurer slinging the ball around the field. We've heard about his spring so far and how he's been impressive under this new offense with Josh Heupel. It seems like the offense played really well. They had a good day in the spring game, and I think the most common word that I used or that I heard used described after the spring game to describe what happened offensively was fun and explosive. And a lot of different styled comments from some of the players after that than what we had grown accustomed to towards the end of last year. Bayless Jones saying, quote, "Man, it was exciting. I know y'all are excited to watch it. It's unbelievable. It's a dream come true. It feels unreal, to be honest. We're just out there flying around having fun." Bit of a different tone on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, yeah, that's this offense, and that's also a comment on the last offense
Bayless
Jones was in. So, yeah, I thought that quote stood out. And important to note on the QB thing, I mean, Hooker technically is the one right now.
Technically.
He started as the one, then it was Maurer, then it was Bailey. So Bailey did some of that damage threes against threes, or at least against largely the third-string defense. Although, again, I mean, this defense is so banged up. There's a lot of mixing and matching that went in there. But you have to keep that in mind.
Yep.
Yeah, he threw the ball well, though. I mean, he threw, you know, he took advantage of, there was a coverage bust on one of the big ones. He took advantage of it, threw it well, makes it interesting because, you know, Maurer didn't, you know, he didn't have a ton of success, you know, compared to those guys. I thought those other guys kind of looked better, but then again, Maurer's numbers were still pretty good. I mean, he had his moments, too. All those guys had their moments. I have no idea. Between those three right now, who would be like the leader? I think it's like coaches always say that stuff at the end of spring. Oh yeah, it's wide open
competition.
But honestly, I mean, I think in this case, it's actually genuine. I mean, I don't think there's much separation at all.
I don't think so either. And you know, maybe gonna add, you know, a different element to it as well with Joe Milton coming in. I mean, how does he fit into this mix as well? Like I think at this point, I'm comfortable saying. Like Caden Salter's not going to play much this year unless, you know, injuries happen and that takes place in the quarterback room. But with, you know, the suspension and everything that's taken place with him this spring, I think you've put yourself so far behind the eight ball at this point where I don't know that Caden Salter is even going to be a factor in this discussion.
I don't see how he could be. You'd have to. The only way a true freshman would be is if he gets a ton of reps as an early enrollee in the spring and he got none. So I think you can count him as a red shirt and focus on apparently four guys. Again, we'll see. With Joe Milton, it's not a bad thing to have more competition to push people. I have my doubts about Joe Milton, but we'll see. I mean, he obviously looked awfully good in practice last year and taking over the starting job at Michigan, looked really good in the first game. Got banged up in a loss to Michigan State. Looked terrible in that game and terrible after that for the most part until he finally lost his job. So how much was the injury a part of how he looked? If it was a lot, then maybe he can come in here and shake things up.
Well, and you know, obviously I think this is what Tennessee fans wanted to see going into this game. Look, it's a spring game. At the end of the day, it really means nothing. And I think we all realize that in this discussion. But I think if you're a Tennessee fan that was either watching it or was in attendance, you wanted to see, all right, what does this offense look like? How different is it? What is the tempo? And you didn't see everything on Saturday, but I think the tempo was encouraging. I think some of the big plays that they made was encouraging too. Now, then the question becomes, all right, how much of that is, hey, this offense is good, and it's got the chance to make some explosive plays this year, and how much of that is, oh, boy, this defense could be pretty rough. As you said, they're dealing with a lot of injuries. And quite frankly, injuries or no injuries, they're thin at some positions. I mean, linebacker, they're in a world of hurt right now at linebacker, and I don't see that getting a ton better as they move forward here. It's going to be a rough year on that standpoint. But, I mean, some of the stats that Ubben laid out here, you had two tackles for a loss on 99 offensive snaps. The defenders broke up just two passes and had zero quarterback hurries. So I think you can look at it a couple of different ways. The offensive line was dominant in the spring game. You can feel really good about your offense, and I think that's certainly valid after this if you're Tennessee fans. But also, like I think if you look at this defense right now, if you're a Tennessee fan and saying, oh, boy, this could be rough this year.
Yeah, no, there's a former Texas A&M linebacker in the portal that I think they're looking. I mean, you would think that somewhere in that portal they'd find a linebacker. They desperately need it. Like, someone could look at Tennessee right now and say, I mean, I could maybe come right in and start. So they need that. They were missing guys anyway Saturday, which is going to already, you know, you got Banks isn't out there. And, I mean, like, you know, they were missing a lot of guys in the front seven. So got to keep that in mind. If there's one thing, I don't know if this matters as much, but I was impressed. You know, this is a spring thing, and you figure they're going to get there anyway, but I was impressed with the operation of the offense. Yeah. I thought that, like, the offensive line and everything, it seemed like they really have taken to it well. I mean, when you change systems that dramatically, sometimes spring games are sloppy as all get out. And this was, I thought the operation was pretty good. Again, what does that mean on the field in the fall? I don't know, but it's kind of an encouraging sign that at least this coaching staff has sort of been able to, you know, reach these guys and install some things quickly. And Heupel said there's way more, you know, that hasn't been installed. So we'll see how much more gets installed.
Well, as we learned from, you know, the apostle that is Jeremy Pruitt, the name of the game offensively is scoring points. So
that's right.
They did a good job of that on Saturday. And now it's been made official. This coming from our buddy Hibbs on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joe Milton on his Instagram has made it official. He's joining Tennessee. So add another body to that quarterback room. Going to be interesting to see how this plays out. With Milton now in the mix, you've got Hendon Hooker transferring in as well. Harrison Bailey and Brian Maurer already there. Caden Salter coming in as a freshman. That's a pretty crowded quarterback room.
Thanks for thanks for a week later letting us know, Joe, that you're
Yes, thank you.
By the way, on his Instagram, the photo of him is in number 7.
Yeah.
You know what number Caden Salter is?
Is he number 7?
Ooh. Hey, controversy.
Get out of here, Salter.
I think if you get freshman. Suspended in the spring, you're a freshman, you have to. You may have to take a new number.
Wear whatever number they give you, I guess.
Hey, quick breaking news, by the way. Shout out to Caroline Rexo. She got her brothers off to school today.
That's pretty impressive.
She put me on FaceTime. I was watching. They got off on time.
Pretty impressive.
I tell you what, we may have to have a new thing in our household.
Could be a new routine.
Caroline runs the whole thing.
That's right. When we come back, we'll be joined by David Ubben from The Athletic. We'll continue the discussion on the Tennessee spring game. What were his observations? Who's going to be the quarterback for Tennessee moving forward? All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Right now talking all things Tennessee Volunteers, the Orange and White game taking place over the weekend. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend David Ubben from The Athletic. David, what's going on, my man? How are we doing?
Not much, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate you taking time to join us. David, what were your observations from the Orange and White game over the weekend? What stood out to you, particularly on the offensive side of the ball?
I mean, I think just that they're playing a totally different sport now. I mean, you know, they're going to score some points. That's just the scheme is more conducive to that. And I think, you know, everybody wants to focus on, oh, everybody's gone, and they had lost a lot. Don't get me wrong. But I think the skill position talent certainly suggests that they had a lot more than their offensive production would suggest the last few years.
So I thought, David, one thing, I thought that they operated the offense pretty impressively given, you know, it's a quick install here. They just had the coaching change. It's a very different kind of offense. And then Heupel said of the game, you know, there's still a lot more to go. I mean, is there anything to take away from just the scheme itself, how it has apparently, you know, adapted well with these players and, you know, that maybe this can really be a productive offense this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it stresses defenses out. It's kind of a numbers game a little bit. You know, if you don't have enough people in the box, they can run it right at you. And Tennessee's going to be able to do that to some teams. You know, they've got good offensive linemen. And I think, too, you know, one thing I think is interesting is when Tennessee played, you know, teams that they were really physically dominant against, like the UTEPs, the Charlottes, some of those other teams, they struggled in the Jerry Pruitt era. They couldn't really hammer the gas. You know, I think they beat UTEP like 24-0, and they had like a 14-3, 14-10 win over Charlotte, something like that. When Tennessee plays teams that they are physically dominant over in this offense, you're going to see them score 40, 50, 60 points because this offense allows you to emphasize those differences and run a lot of plays as well. So I think that'll be refreshing. I mean, I think it's going to be obviously fun to watch, and you know, and we'll see. I mean, it's only going to get better because this is, you know, this is as little of the offense as they know. This is as bad as the roster is probably going to be for a while. So, you know, adding more depth, doing all those things, you know, a promising start in a lot of ways.
David, obviously the quarterback position, it's a bit of a crowded room right now. You've got Hendon Hooker, you've got Brian Maurer, Harrison Bailey all taking place and getting some action on Saturday. Joe Milton just officially announcing that he's coming to Tennessee as well. Caden Salter, not a part of things at the moment, but I would assume he factors in at some point in the future for Tennessee. What stood out to you about the quarterbacks on Saturday, and who do you think the leader in the clubhouse is right now to be the starter?
I mean, I think it's still Hooker for a little bit. You know, I don't think that their gap is that far. I don't think Josh Heupel has much interest in, you know, he straight up said, you know, after the game, he's been in enough quarterback competitions that, you know, obviously right now Hendon Hooker was working with the ones. Harrison Bailey was working with the third team. There's a reason why his 73-yard touchdown pass on the first drive was to a walk-on defended by a walk-on down the field. So he had the best day out of the three, but, you know, he wasn't going up against the first team defense a ton. So, yeah, it's Hooker's got a narrow lead, but, you know, he basically, you know, Josh Heupel basically said, hey, there's a lot of football left. You can go back, watch these practices, learn the offense, spend some time in off-season workouts, all that stuff, and then you got preseason camp. And then, of course, Joe Milton's a really talented guy, and he can come in here and make a big impact. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of football left. I think they kind of know where their pecking order is, even if they don't really want to acknowledge it publicly, but I don't think that there's a ton of separation. And we saw that on Saturday. You know, those guys didn't look a ton different. Not a great day for Hendon Hooker. Finished it really strong. Harrison Bailey looked the best at all of those, but, you know, certainly not going up against the first team offense as much or first team defense as much. So what do you kind of take away from that? I think the biggest thing I took away is it's still really close.
So I'm struggling to buy Milton as a serious contender for this job. He didn't get, obviously, any of these reps in the spring, so he's coming in behind. Although, you know, he was banged up last year, and I think that's apparently a big part of why things didn't go well. What's your sense for him and how he compares to these other three guys?
I would be really scared to bet against him as a starting quarterback. I'll say that. Mm. I get that people are, you know, I don't know, you know, I haven't seen this guy. His numbers at Michigan weren't very good. Listen, these quarterbacks' numbers weren't very good in Michigan's offense. I think it's a very similar situation, or in Tennessee's offense last year. I think it's a very similar situation. Michigan's offense not exactly setting the world on fire. Very similar to what Tennessee has been doing. And I think in a better offense, you know, you're going to look a little better. And I don't know that I'd bet on it, but I would be real scared betting against Joe Milton not being Tennessee's starter on day one.
David Ubbin from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And, David, obviously, losing Eric Gray and Ty Chandler at running back, those are two heavy losses for this offense. Who's standing out right now at running back? What does the depth of that position look like as they move into this year?
They've got a lot of unproven guys, but guys that we've seen enough to say they're going to be fine there. I mean, Jabari Small has established himself as the lead dog there. But then behind him, you know, Tyon Evans was really hurt, banged up during spring, and he wasn't able to do a ton. We didn't see a lot from him. But I think he probably ends up being the number two guy. And then Jalen Wright had a really good spring. You know, he's a home run hitter. I think him and D. Beckwith will probably get some spot touches, and they're going to be fine there. They got a lot of really, really good players at that running back spot. That you know, that they're going to be in good shape.
So, are we just going to spend this whole segment not talking about defense and pretending?
I was getting there.
Pretending it doesn't exist.
I was getting there.
No. How about some defense, David? What do you say? Anything that stands out? Anything that makes you feel optimistic about this defense in 21?
No, not really.
I mean, all right, never mind. Let's just talk about special teams.
I will say they weren't very good on Saturday, but I don't think they're going to be that bad come fall for a number of reasons. One, they were missing eight guys in that front seven that will probably contribute in the fall, barring a transfer or injuries. So even though they were pretty full strength in the secondary, like, they were at, I mean, when you have a bunch of comfortable quarterbacks, you're not affecting the quarterback really at all. You're asking a lot of the secondary, and so they had, you know, especially more so on the second and third units, a ton of miscommunications and busts. You saw some of those big plays, freeing guys up down the field. So, you know, it's going to be an uphill battle for those guys. They just don't have the bodies. You know, defensive line, you got some depth there, but they just, there's nobody that really stands out. Linebacker, I mean, it is what it is. They're going to have better, you know, more guys coming back, but I just don't think they're going to be very good at linebacker. And when you're struggling in the front seven, it's going to make life tough for the secondary. And, you know, they've got a lot to prove. I'll say that.
David Ubben from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. David, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. David Ubben, one of the best in the business, friend of the show here on the program. I guess the rumors, maybe he'll have to suit up at linebacker. I mean, they're really thin at linebacker. I mean, and look, no disrespect to Jeremy Banks. I know he came in and came into the program as a running back. He is not a starting SEC linebacker. And right now,
not ideally.
Like, he's one of their top options, and that's just not a very good recipe for success.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. And, you know, a guy like that can – he's got athleticism. He's a thumper, but there's a lot more to the position, and so far he hasn't really demonstrated the ability to do it. People can still improve, but then, I mean, you know, you talk about lack of depth. I mean, it just – goodness. It's a tough situation for them. I really think – like, there's where the portal needs to come into play for Tennessee, is that linebacker. I mean, there's those guys out there. Crouch is still out there.
Yeah. Get him back.
Apparently, Crouch is at Michigan State's spring game.
Really?
Yeah. How about that?
Hey, maybe that's where he's going to – Sparty, come on.
Yeah, there you go. I say Tennessee, you know, until a guy gets out of the portal, he's still available. So,
what do you think of what
– he'd be like their defensive star next year.
What do you think of what David threw out there of he'd be scared to bet against Joe Milton as being the starting quarterback at Tennessee?
I tell you what. I mean, I had to tweet that quote immediately because I was like, really? Man, okay. I don't know. We'll see. If all that stuff last year was about the thumb, then okay. But I watched a few Michigan games, and I thought he could throw it okay. I thought the decisions he was making were the problem, you know? And that's a fair point that offense, and Harbaugh has gone through all these OCs and he's tried to do all these different things, and so it's been kind of a mess. So maybe you put him in an offensive system where they know how to develop quarterbacks, they know exactly what they want to do, it makes a difference, but I don't know, man. He didn't get the spring, he didn't get these reps. Like, if he comes in the fall, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, Joe Milton. I would be surprised, but that's definitely an eyebrow raiser, and I trust David.
Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant here on the program. There's some things that have made Joe Rexroad upset. We'll get to those coming up next. Also got some tickets to give away to see the Nashville Predators take on the Florida Panthers as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
And that's out to the land. Oh, yeah. Time for the Rex Rant here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming back in with a little Wagon Wheel by Darius Rucker. You can hear that at literally any Broadway bar downtown at any time of the night.
I kind of wanted to keep listening to that. I don't think I've ever heard that song.
You've never heard Wagon Wheel?
I probably have.
It's awesome.
Are you kidding me?
Maybe the most overplayed song in Nashville. There's no maybe. It is the most overplayed song in Nashville.
Is that a relatively new song?
Oh, no.
No.
The original version is probably literally 60 years old. That's the more modern version by Darius Rucker. It's probably every bit of 10 or 12 years old, though,
sure.
I would say.
Well, I'll tell you what. That sounded better than any Hootie and the Blowfish song I've ever heard.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, puke.
Only want to be with you.
Only want to be with you. That was good. I kind of liked that. I kind of wanted to keep rolling with the country. You thought you were going to make me mad, Porth, and I liked it.
You put him in a good mood. So with that being said, it's time for the Rex Rant here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe Rexroad is mad, and he's ready to go. Joe, I turn it over to you.
As always, I want this to be a conversation starter. So I want to start out talking about Madison Bumgarner. He's had a very good career. You know, he had his best days with the Giants. But you're talking about a very good career, 3.25 career ERA. I just looked that up today, 122 wins. He's been a four-time All-Star. He's been close on the Cy Young a few times. One thing he has never done is he's never thrown a no-hitter until yesterday when he did throw a no-hitter for the Diamondbacks against the Braves. Well, except it's not a no-hitter because it was a seven-inning game because Major League Baseball is doing seven-inning doubleheaders this year.
They are.
Still. I mean, I'm trying to think of the last seven-inning game I played, like fourth grade Little League?
I did it in high school.
Fifth grade Little League? When did you play seven-inning games in high school?
2007, 2008.
Like just a straight-up seven-inning game?
Seven innings, yeah. We didn't do nine.
Really?
Yeah, it was seven.
Okay, well, anyway, I guess Virginia in the late 80s was a little different. But regardless, we're talking high school, Little League, stuff like this, like not Major League Baseball, okay? We're also still putting runners on second in extra innings. What in the hell are we talking about here? I mean, in COVID year, it's fine, but we're going to carry these things into this year? Why? We're going to have everybody make the playoffs now? I'm trying to understand what these rules I get mad, too, about the whole idea of banning the shift. Why would you ever – people can align defensively however they want.
If you don't like the shift, hit away from it.
Exactly. I feel like baseball is trying to – I feel like they're trying to create some rules to – obviously, length of game is a big thing here.
Yes,
right?
It is.
But, like, doing something like the seven-inning doubleheader, that's seriously like a football – like a primetime football game, say, you know what, it's late night, let's do three quarters. We'll have a 45-minute game. It makes a – or, you know, the runner on second, it's like basketball overtime. Let's just give – we'll give both teams a two-on-one fast break both ways and see how it goes. Like, I think it's incredibly stupid. And, look, I understand that baseball games get long, but I think tradition matters in this sport maybe as much as any sport. And I know as a kid, I think it's a problem that we don't have enough kids who love baseball. My kids faded out of baseball, didn't want to play it. I don't know how to change that. But I know as a baseball fan, when we used to go to doubleheaders at Tiger Stadium because it's two for the price of one.
Yeah.
And you sit there and you 7 hours at the ballpark. I'll take seven more. This is not going to help anything. But it makes it all gimmicky and stupid, and I'm sick of it. So baseball's had a lot of different eras. They've had ups and downs. They've had dead ball eras and live ball eras and steroid eras and all this stuff. But this is like the Mickey Mouse era right now with this stuff. And I was fine with anything you wanted to do last year because it's any kind of baseball we can see,
sure.
Great. This is outrageous to keep this stuff going. And so this guy – Madison Bumgarner maybe has the first and only no-hitter of his career. He has two more innings to get it. He doesn't get credit for one. I don't see how anyone wants – I mean, show me someone who wants seven-inning doubleheaders. Show me someone who wants – you do?
Right here.
Why?
Every baseball game should be seven innings. Nine innings is too long.
Okay, all right.
So every single baseball game should be seven.
So you don't
care. I have no problem with seven.
So then ERA, everything is all totally changed.
Don't care.
There is no sport where the statistical, you know, the Hall of Fame and everything is more built on statistics that are based on 162 that are based on nine inning games. Come on.
I hear you, but I'm just saying, like from your casual viewer standpoint, I don't watch baseball. I don't.
So you would have at seven innings?
I would be more likely to watch a baseball game if it was seven innings. I don't want to spend 4 hours watching a game every night. Like, I have better things to do with my time than sit there 4 hours. Like, it's not going to happen.
You're making me, again, I'm feeling the hoodie puke come up. Porth, seven-inning games?
Come on,
you're a baseball guy.
I don't mind these seven-inning doubleheaders.
Oh, my God.
I thought we were
going to have a nice conversation, which consisted of you guys agreeing with me.
No.
That's not
baseball
fun.
is built on
speed
nine
this thing
innings.
Up.
But okay, fine. But it's a nine inning game. I mean, we're going back to the like 1860s.
If they could play the nine inning game in a reasonable amount of time, I'm cool with it. But they can't. They demonstrated that time and again.
So college football, it's way longer than the NFL. We've talked about it, right? So should college football go to 10-minute quarters? You okay with that?
No, they should keep the
clock
running after
first
down. They
can start the freaking clock. That's all they need to do.
Listen, baseball is a game without a clock. I mean, it's different from a lot of sports in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I don't mind, like, the like the pitch clock and stuff like that's fine. You know, things like that to artificially speed things up a little bit. Some of these pitchers take forever between pitch. Like, that's fine. But the fabric of the game is it's a nine-inning game.
I hear you. But they look, people my – look, I grew up playing
ERA
baseball.
Not going to be based on seven innings? That's garbage.
You make changes all the time.
I freaking T-ball.
Hey, they're going to 17 games in the NFL. They're changing things up.
Well, they're stupid too. Let's go to T-ball. We'll just go. I had Carolina on FaceTime earlier. She had some awesome T-ball games. Okay, hit the ball, and then you go to first. Okay, and the next kid hits the ball, and then you go to second, and then you go to third, and then everybody scores, and then we have some popsicles.
Also, I kind of actually like the runner starting on second in extra innings too.
Good
That's
God.
A permanent thing.
That is.
They need to keep that
You
around.
Too?
I don't like that.
Oh, okay. You don't like that one.
Matter of fact, we were just at a game last week where a game got won with a runner starting on second base. Extra innings.
That is correct.
I mean, it's baseball.
There's no need
three
for
outs
a...
in an inning. Let's have two-out innings. But let's have two-out innings.
There's no need for a 16-inning baseball game. Let's try to get this thing sped up a little bit. Well, Start running on third. I don't care.
But why don't you just say –
Start
you
with
just,
runner on third and two outs.
Let's just play paper, going. Rock, scissors, and whoever gets the extra run, and they win. Let's just flip a coin, and you win the game.
Hey.
Great. Let's just not play the game at all.
College football is two-point – overtime rule now, where after the second overtime is just 2-point conversions, that is so much worse than the runner starting on second in extra innings.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, because no, it's not. It's our the college overtime, which I love. We all love.
Sure,
it was gimmicky in the first place, right?
Yes.
I mean, you're starting the 25. I mean, actually, the college overtime is kind of like that, right? It's like you're starting with an advantage for the offense. So it was. I mean, I don't like that change either, but. Baseball, the pitcher comes to the mound, and there's a leadoff hitter, and then you go from there. It's baseball. I don't – like, this is a sport that, to me, I feel like they are trying to figure out ways to appeal to people, and this isn't going to work. This is not going to work.
It's probably not. But I'm just saying, like, I hear what you're saying with the tradition
so
of it
don't,
all.
So don't piss off people who love traditional actual baseball.
But if they don't do something, they're not going to be around much longer.
But this
generation does not care about baseball.
This generation is not going to all of a sudden be all excited because it's a seven-inning game either. So at least keep the people who love baseball and what it is and what it's been their whole lives, and don't throw all this gimmicky crap at them. Don't turn baseball. It's like the NFL all of a sudden adopting all the XFL rules or something. No. No.
But do you think fans want to stay at a stadium for 7 hours for a doubleheader?
I'll tell you again.
Not anymore.
Well, maybe not anymore.
I know Braves fans probably wanted to go home after having one hit over 14 innings yesterday.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. So if that's the case, are they like, well, let's go to this doubleheader, and boy, I hope it's just 5 hours. I mean, if you're going to a doubleheader at all, you probably want to watch a lot of baseball, right?
Yeah, probably so.
I mean, there aren't that many doubleheaders anymore anyway. But
There's been a lot of doubleheaders this season.
Yeah. Well, this season, you're right. But and so they have this 7-8 thing. But again, like, these games don't even really count. Madison Bumgarner can attest to that.
Let's go to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Frank texted in, Grandpa Joe, baseball games are too long, too many pitching changes, too many stops. They need to change and are trying something. Are you good with the NFL 17-game season? Do you want to go back to 14 games for consistent stats? That's Frank. Come on, Joe.
Well, Frank, I want him to say it 16 games because we've had the same stats since 1976 or 78.
One of those two.
Yeah. Okay. So you set something up for more than 40 years, for almost a half century, you had a tradition, and we all are, okay, this is, I mean, baseball especially, statistics, it's everything for the Hall of Fame. It is a statistics sport, and now you're going to jack things up with your 7-inning games.
That's today's
record. It's only double headers.
But okay. So two jacked up games. Great. Two for the price of one. Two ridiculous. So let's have two no hitters that don't count. I mean,
and you're in and out in five or 6 hours instead of
great.
Eight or nine.
Well, yeah. So, 5.5 hours versus 6.5 makes all the difference. If you're going to a double header, you want baseball. Again, as a kid, kids don't have a lot of patience, right? I would have sat there for 14 straight hours at Tiger Stadium watching baseball, keeping score, eating hot dogs.
Most kids don't want to do that nowadays.
But so this is going to make them? No. It's not going to make them want to. I mean, it's the game itself, you know, has lost out to some other sports. These are all different things. There are fundamental issues in terms of trying to get young people into baseball, but making these games a little bit faster while also carving into your tradition at the highest level is not the way to go.
Ryan Porth, we've got some Nashville Predators tickets to give away to see the Preds take on the Florida Panthers tonight at Bridgestone Arena, and you have a trivia question that you've thrown out there as well. You can respond on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Ryan Porth, today's trivia question is...
So the Predators and Panthers play tonight at Bridgestone Arena. They also play tomorrow night. Big back-to-back for the Preds. And one of the memorable trades in Preds-Panthers transactional history was Thomas Mokoun being traded from the Preds to the Panthers back in the summer of 07. And one of the draft picks that the Preds received back from Florida was a 2008 first-round pick. What player did the Predators take with that first-round pick that they got from Florida?
So if you know the answer to that question, hit up our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. If you get it right, you'll win a pair of tickets to see the Nashville Predators take on the Florida Panthers tonight at Bridgestone Arena. You got to be the first one to get it right on our text line. We'll be right back with Corey Curtis from News 2. You're listening to Robbie and Rexro, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.